Welcome, listeners, to the Gila Members Community Radio Show, Earth Matters. This is the show that brings you in-depth coverage of local, state, and national environmental issues. We want to challenge, inform, engage, and inspire you. Three hosts alternate weekly shows to bring you a broad range of topics and expertise. I'm your host today, Dr. Kim McCrary, Southwest Regional Director and Staff Scientist with the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance. NM Wild, as we are affectionately known by many, is a grassroots organization dedicated to protecting and restoring New Mexico's wild places through advocacy and education, and ultimately legislation. This week, we continue with the Economic Forum on Community Development, Tourism, and Public Lands, listening to expert panelist Catherine Wanick. Then you'll hear what local folks and our panelists had to say during the community discussion.
And now Catherine Wanick is the innkeeper at the Black Range Lodge in Kingston and serves on the Sierra County and Southwest New Mexico Tourism Boards. Also an accomplished author, photographer, and filmmaker, she has enjoyed living in the beautiful Gila National Forest since 1984. Catherine's presentation will be about green tourism opportunities in Southwest New Mexico. Catherine?
So ecolonomics, I just called it that. Dennis Weaver, I think, invented this word where we can have a good economy, but we can also take care of have a sustainable economy. And so it's ecological and economic at the same time. That's my personal goal. This is where I live. I'm on the other side of the mountain, on the eastern edge of the Gila, and this is what it looks like from the east, and that's my place, the Black Range Lodge. And as you can see, it's beautiful, and that's what I love. I love waking up every morning and another beautiful day in Kingston. And when Ben said quality of life was, the number one reason people live here, well, that's certainly true for me as well. And I think he hit that nail on the head. So that's the lodge there, the front of the lodge. There's one of our guest rooms. And this is a view that I see almost every day. Star Peak in the background and beautiful big skies. I think that's something we can all relate to. And my personal story is not so important, but I find myself running this bed and breakfast, as well as I'm interested in other things, and I write and I make little videos and so on. But you can tell my business is in full time because I have time to do other things, although it's pretty busy. I found myself really enjoying what I do at the lodge. Why tourism? Well, tourism creates about one out of every 12 jobs here in New Mexico. And there's all these other sectors of the economy that are influenced and impacted by tourism as it trickles, as the dollars from outside our community trickle down into our community. And that's a great thing because we are finding that these dollars come from outside. And so it doesn't create the pollution or the increased roads or traffic. Well, a little more traffic, certainly, but doesn't require as many services. I think the economic impact of tourism is very, very positive. And these dollars circulate in our community. And who are these tourists? Well, many of my guests come from New Mexico, from other parts of New Mexico, and generally, they're pretty nice people. They all have their interesting stories. They're doing interesting things. They're out here. They've gone off the beaten path to find something interesting and beautiful, and they're just a real enhancement to my own life. So I think that tourism is not just about the dollars, but it's really about bringing interesting people who sometimes, like it so much, they want to settle down and they want to stay here. So that's what our goal is always to get more people to come and visit and stay longer. Fortunately, we've always had a New Mexico tourism department, Department of Tourism, and they are now, I think they've hit the nail on the head personally with the New Mexico True campaign. It's certainly, I think, what we have here and what I feel about New Mexico is that we are authentic. You know, the people who, you, everyone in this room, I'm sure we could sit down and talk and we would have something real to say to each other. We're not here pretending to be somebody that we're not. So the experiences that we offer are authentic and true. And so now we here in the Gila region, which I call the Gila High Country, Sierra County, Catron County, Grant County, we have the state behind us. So the New Mexico True campaign is starting to work, and I think it will work. It's not just about Santa Fe and Albuquerque, but it's about the entire state and the idea of branding New Mexico and getting more interest. But one of the things that they do say is that we need to work on getting visitors to return. So that also was corroborated by what Ben had to say when he said, you know, we need highly skilled people and we need really good hospitality skills. If we're going to keep people, attract them, and give them best quality experience we have. As I mentioned, there's been ecotourism efforts before, and one of the things that we did is we identified the Gila as a, you know, we call it the Gila High Country, that kind of encompasses this whole region that's not bounded by artificial lines on the map or the Continental Divide or county lines or any roads. It's really this big, vast, beautiful area, the Gila. From on my side, this is Hillsborough Peak, looking to the east, some of the beautiful national forest trails up there on the Gila. We have wildlife of all kinds. And, of course, we have the Gila Cliff Dwellings. We have got lots of history. So these are some of the assets that we have, you know, here to celebrate and to enjoy ourselves. You know, there's almost 3 million acres of natural beauty. Included is the so-called remotest spot in New Mexico. You know, people, here's City of Rocks. There's all sorts of activities that people can enjoy, hiking, biking, birding, stargazing, rock climbing, rock hounding, geocaching, bicycling, and so forth. There's also a lot of history we have here. Of course, we don't see that much about the Apache history, but we would like to see more of that and have more of that explained to us and to, and in a sense, be available to us so that we can appreciate it. So it's great to have Joe not only here, but also doing what he's doing and the Red Paint Powwow and all and what he's offering to tap into that, what we've really lost in the culture that was driven out. This happens to be Kingston back in the 1880s when it was one of the largest cities in the whole territory of New Mexico, maybe the largest. And there's lots of history of the mining history and whatnot. And this is Hillsborough and Lake Valley. That's my side of the mountain. We're in the Rio Grande by Truth or Consequences. And what a spectacular place we live. So that's compensation alone. So if the dollars aren't always there, we certainly have million-dollar views. And I guess I'm making my way here towards Silver City. And we also have a great scene in terms of growing your own food and what a great quality of life that adds to us. And the wonderful, I love your campaign, by the way, Savor Silver City. It's brilliant, I think. And one of the lucky things that it might be the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow and an asset that is coming to our region is the Spaceport America. Now, I know there's a lot of skepticism, and I personally was quite skeptical when I first heard about this idea, but it's there now. And probably in another year and a half, they'll be actually sending flights up into outer space. The people that are going to be up there, there's only going to be 2 flights per week and 6 people per flight. They're the ones spending $200,000 per ticket to fly into outer space. But the broader vision of the spaceport is not just flying into outer space, recreation for the super wealthy, but the state of New Mexico owns it. And Virgin Galactic, who's sending these astronauts, these new nuevo astronauts into outer space, they're just a tenant. And the expectation is there's going to be a lot more tenants. And the next wave is going to be a wave of the future, of future exploration into outer space. And this is the type of thing that could bring the kind of quality jobs and the kind of quality and income and so forth is to this region. Of course, it's over the mountain from here, but it's also not that far away. And in addition to those high rollers and the technology buffs, it's estimated that the spaceport is going to bring 150,000 additional visitors to the region every year, or possibly even more, because they're interested. They're like, they've heard of the spaceport, you know, and they want to have a little, their own experience of it. Well, there will be some welcome centers and some tours and so on, but those people are now going to be in southern New Mexico. So what can we do to attract these people? You know, I'm hoping to attract them 40 miles up the road to the west. And once they get to Kingston, you know, they're going to see how gorgeous it is. And, you know, we're going to say, hey, you got to go over to Silver City, too. I think that that this is a big opportunity for us. And I think that it's wise if we anticipate that. And if we think about what can we do to attract some of those people to this particular region, the other side, the west side of the Gila. So I was fortunate to be invited to a little reception there about a month ago and watch the full moon rise there. And up in the top, that's Audrey Herrera. She's one of the tourism folks from Santa Fe coming down to not just party, but to really meet with all these, the accredited space agents. This is their third trip. And these are travel agents from all over the world that are going to be selling these $200,000 tickets to outer space. And I happen to meet the guy from Tokyo. He's already sold 16 or 20 tickets, and he's one of the top agents so far. But people from New Zealand, all over Europe, all over this the USA, they're all coming here. And that brings me just tangentially, really, to Richard Branson of Virgin Galactic's Five Rules for Good Business. And I think that it's different than you'll read from those top CEOs of big companies, because really the number one thing on his list is, if you don't enjoy it, don't do it. You must love what you do. And I think that really resonates with us here in this region, because that's why we're here. We're here because we love it, because of the quality of life, and it's not because of the paycheck. Doesn't mean we don't need a paycheck, but you love what you do. And number two, be innovative. Number three, take care of your employees and make sure your employees are happy, because they are important in terms of your customers. And always get and listen to and heed the feedback you get from your employees and customers. And also be visible and market your company, you know, in Richard Branson's case, by being out front in the cameras. But also, I think that is a key element, marketing. We can always do more marketing. So marketing or promoting ourselves. And really just that means putting ourselves out there. Well, there's some new opportunities for marketing that I will share with you. One of them is the New Mexico Tourism website, where anyone who has a business can list their business for free. And you can put up to 10 photographs of your business on the website. And literally, they're begging us to do it. They're begging us because, you know, it takes a little time. I confess myself, it took me 3 tries to finish my listing. I went on there and I got stuck on the second question, you know, describing my business, you know. Oh, so then I went back, and finally I was prepared. So I recommend that to you when you get ready to list your business. Have your 10 best photographs, you know what they're going to be, or, you know, take a gander at it. But one of the good things they've done to create this listing is they have, you can get in there and you can put some things in and save it. And if you can't finish it, then you don't have to publish it. You can save it just as it is, go back, get more information, edit your thing, get more pictures until you really like it. You know, it might take you half an hour, you know, to create your listing, but it's free. and it goes, and it's there on the state. And every bit of New Mexico True is driving people to that website. So really, you're benefiting from all the money that's being spent in Santa Fe at the governmental level in tourism. Every one of us in the state who has a business can, have a listing. So I really highly recommend take advantage of that.
Stay tuned, and we'll be right back. We're back with our final panelist, Catherine Wanick.
When we were visualizing what was the Gila High Country and what was our vision, we really did not want to encourage tourism without reducing the quality of life that I keep talking about, because we care about it. So we do not want to wreck those beautiful views, and we want to encourage the diversity of wildlife, but we also want to encourage the diversity of people that come visit us. And so these are the values and goals that we came up with, supporting best practices among our eco-adventure providers, that's you, Joe, and to offer an awe-inspiring educational experience that minimizes human impact on our natural ecosystems, that balances human comfort with environmental conservation and regeneration of local histories and cultures, etc., and biodiversity, and adopt sound stewardship and conservation practices that protect and renew our resources, and explore cooperative ventures with the rest of the community, and also maintain the highest standards of hospitality and customer service, not the least of which is to attract high-caliber visitors who will be inspired by and respect the environment. These are our goals and our visions. And speaking of promotion, the more we can get, the merrier. This is just one example of from Men's Journal. There's Joe that talks about the Gila, and it's I guess it's still a secret, but that's I guess our job or our goal is to maintain our standards, our ecological standards, at the same time, increasing the number of people. Because even if our tourism doubled, that would be something to strive for. I think we still would have plenty of room out there for those people. That is because we have a lot of land to spread them out. Back to Virgin Galactic and those accredited space agents. Well, the first time they came a couple years ago, they were sat down in a group and they were asked to give their feedback on their experience. So here's some things that we do. We do a lot of art. And we have a lot of history, and we could do more of that. There's a lot of music here, and that's a great quality of life issue for me personally, and I know here for most of us. Oh, weddings. More and more eco-weddings are happening, and what a better place to have them than out in country. How beautiful is that? Being outside and reading a book. Or, of course, biking, hiking, even driving through the spectacular scenery. And from the New Mexico Tourism Department, here's their monthly report for October, just basically saying things are looking up in terms of their metrics they get from the website. Lots more opening rates. This New Mexico True campaign seems to be working. There's more and more people from the drive markets that are the surrounding states, Arizona, Texas, Colorado. There are more and more of them that are visiting the website. They're staying longer. They're opening the newsletter. There's more and more people doing business online. The tourism department has also created a mobile app for your smartphone, and more people, especially younger people, are using their smartphones and deciding where to go. So it's very smart to team up with the New Mexico Tourism Department. Now, while I share some more beautiful pictures of our beautiful area we live in, I'm going to give you a little feedback from the Virgin Galactic space agents. Most of them had never been to New Mexico, and very few had been to southern New Mexico. Many of them knew about Santa Fe, Albuquerque, but not the south. And they found it a real surprise. And the reception they have gotten from everyone they met was overwhelmingly positive. they didn't realize that New Mexico has a long history of the development of space technology. They felt that our visitors need to know more about our space history, and they said tying in our space history in the area is key to marketing the region and Spaceport America. So I would say stargazing and the Very Large Array, those are assets that we have. You know, I call it a billion star experience. You know, there's a heck of a lot more than five stars out there. And the authenticity of the place and the people is what struck everyone as our greatest asset. There you go. Stick to your roots. The people here are welcoming and genuinely friendly. And they were pleasantly surprised. There was more to do here than they expected. The scenery alone is worth the trip, they said. They also enjoyed the cultural locales, the Pelham House and Hatch, the La Posta and Mesilla. And they really were surprised and impressed by the cultural significance. One of the things their clients are going to expect are five-star experiences, so-called. While everything doesn't have to be five-star, services must be deluxe for their people. So I think we need to think about how can we up our service. In fact, accommodations and TRC are way too rustic for their companies, their customers. But if we do build any new hotels, they say, they should blend in rather than look like chain hotels. And Spaceport America can be an example of how tourism can take an entire area and help it both economically and culturally. But they stress, don't create a Disney World type of destination. Our focus should be keep it simple, keep it small, keep it authentic. There you go, New Mexico True. Thank you very much for your kind attention, and I also suggest that you become a member of the Green Chamber of Commerce, or at least get on their mailing list, because the Green Chamber is one of those communitarian organizations that's going to enhance our ecological and minimize our impact, our environmental impact, and it's nice to be in the presence of people that share your values, and you're in a group there, and you can basically help advertise together, you know, so there's a lot of synergy that can happen there. Another suggestion I have, a free suggestion, make sure you, as a business, you have a Facebook page. Facebook is super big, as most of you probably already know, and it's all free. I'm always careful about what I put there, because I understand I don't own it anymore once it's up on Facebook, but they offer a business page for free, and that's a way that you can get out to all those people out there in the world. I have a website, but then I also can put my current events up on this Facebook page. And another place to get listed is on TripAdvisor. If you're out there in the internet universe, as I'm sure you all are, what I've discovered is, right, Facebook and TripAdvisor. Those are the two places that I'm going to spend my time and energy, because the majority of people now, before they take a trip, they go to TripAdvisor. If you have service-oriented business, motels or hotels or even restaurants are automatically listed if they know about you. One last thing, I am a member of this, what they call the Southwest New Mexico Tourism Board, and that's just the Santa Fe Central Tourism Department a long time ago divided the state into six different regions, and we're known as Region 2, but we're Southwest New Mexico. It stretches all the way from Socorro down to Mexico and from the Rio Grande to the Arizona border. So it's, you know, the big Southwest region of New Mexico. And there are also representatives from Las Cruces, Elephant Butte, Truth or Consequences, Silver City, Socorro, and myself. And I sort of represent, I basically represent the Gila region, the more rural regions. So if anybody has some, feel free to contact me. And these quarterly meetings are open to the public if you're at all interested in getting involved on a statewide level. But really, I don't think that's necessary. I think if you can do it right here in your local community, I think that's where more the power is. And again, the Green Chamber, and get on the newmexico.org website, and also Facebook and TripAdvisor. That's your homework. Thanks for coming.
All right. Well, we're going to open it up to questions. And if you'll raise your hand, I'm going to bring the microphone to you so that we can be sure and get all of this for the radio station. So does anybody have a question or a comment?
Well, it's sort of a question and a comment. We're recently new here, and one of the challenges, at least personally, I have faced is like transportation to a major airport. And it seems crazy that individual people are driving to Albuquerque, Tucson, El Paso, and I don't know, I mean, I don't know, I'm too new to know what's been done or thought about. But in terms of like a large company, I would think that would be a challenge.
I won't speak to the local airport issue, although I had to fly to El Paso to come here today. Both connections and cost pushed me that direction. But we have done some of the original research on looking at the importance of commercial airports in rural places in the West for economic development, and found that it's one of the sort of the critical legs of the tripod if you're going to grow and mature, diversify that economy. Staying connected, finding ways to connect to larger markets is critical. And you know, we don't even have to know why, but you know, the numbers bear it out. And we used a threshold of 25,000 commercial employments a year as a standard for establishing whether an airport was commercially viable. We called a lot of FAA and small airport people that could come up with that number. And I meant to look up the number here at the local airport before coming, but I didn't. But it would be interesting to see what the number of annual employments are. And then, you know, people say, oh, yeah, we have an airport, but then you actually look at what a ticket costs to get somewhere, or you look at what the scheduling issues are, and it's not really a viable airport. So a lot of resort communities, small public lands counties that have, for example, a ski resort, will find that the ski resort will provide a revenue guarantee along with a county for an airline to establish an initial run of service, and that becomes that's what steamrolls eventually, or doesn't. You find out. We do some revenue guarantees in Southwest Montana, a number of our communities, and they're critical to the broader business community. And without those resort/local government investments, it would be a tough argument. But I just want to echo what you're saying. It's really key.
My only one comment, the greatest, one of the best secrets in Grant County is, you know, that we have Grant County Municipal Airport, and Great Lakes now offers a flight, two flights a week to and from Phoenix. And I know it's not cheap, but at least there's access. And if you're a business, you can put it in your budget. I think it would be certainly worthwhile to consider doing that as opposed to traveling to Tucson or El Paso, or certainly Albuquerque, for whatever that's worth.
Yeah, with all that talk about airports and costs, what every time gas raises to some critical level, I always read that it's going to impact areas like this. In tourism, I mean, with all your increases and where we're going with tourism, is that factored in somewhere? And are we hoping or praying that gas is going to stay low, which it's not? How does that play out with all of what you're saying?
Well, with my business, I depend on my clients coming in from all around the world, and the way that I've sort of worked around this is that I found a gentleman that enjoys driving, and we've managed to work out with him a schedule that he shuttles clients all the way around this area to Phoenix, Albuquerque, Tucson, El Paso, and so it depends. It seems to depend on individual people that have that desire to provide that type of service. As we were talking, that services seems to be the biggest increase in the area. Fortunately, that's how I worked around that. And he's been very reliable about running clients back and forth. And because of that, his reputation has sort of gotten around. And so he's now providing shuttle runs for U-Trails. He's providing shuttle runs for Double E Ranch. He's doing it for me. He's doing it for individual people around the area. And so, again, this is just another example of promoting those small-scale type of service, and he's a great example of that. But I know that when the Las Cruces shuttle shut down, I thought I was going to be in trouble and having to run all the shuttles myself. But fortunately, you know, like I said, I worked at it and found this gentleman, and he's around, he's available, and so that's just another avenue for that.
Well, I think that's great. I think Americans are going to drive no matter what. And I think what we need to work on is continuing to create the best destination that we can so that we're going to continue to attract them. I don't know what the price of gas is going to do, but I do know that we're way too independent to give up our cars. So I'm glad to hear that there's an airport shuttle is great, and having an airport here, hopefully, as more and more people do discover the area, we'll get to that level where there will be an airport here, a viable airport. And I guess there is one right now, right? A couple flights a week at least. Again, I think what we need to do is continue to be ourselves, just be a better version of ourselves.
Well, thank you so much, Catherine and Joe and Ben, for your presentation. My name is Jackie Blurton. I own the Silver City KOA Campground, so tourism is my business. And I'd like to say, very important to the community also, whether you're in the tourism business or you just moved to Silver City for the lifestyle, tourism is one of those economic drivers that keeps our downtown healthy and vital, and is important to our galleries and shops and to my business too. I was really curious about how many people here are involved in tourism and how many are just residents of the area that are interested in and have moved here for the lifestyle. How many people have a business that is shops, galleries, tourism? So most of us are just residents that moved here for the lifestyle, is that correct? It does keep our, tourism does keep our economy really vital, and I appreciate Ben's statistics. If anybody goes to the Grant County website and looks up their economic analysis, they'll find a lot of those same statistics there for our area. And I'm so glad you were interested enough to come and listen to this presentation on tourism and economics and its economic impact to the area. And if you're interested in helping the community become more vital, the Green Chamber of Commerce and our visitors center can always use volunteers and help, and it's what's great about the community is people's participation in it, and we all really appreciate that. So if there's anything you'd like to do to volunteer to help drive our economy and improve our area, you know, we've Silver City and the Gila Wilderness is very underutilized, and more visitors here isn't going to hurt our quality of life at all. It's going to help improve it. So it's great meeting you all. Thank you for listening, and do stop in at the Green Chamber or the Visitor Center if you'd like to help out, and have fun meeting all the great people that are there.
Time for a station break, and we'll be back in a moment with the Economic Forum.
Hi, a very interesting presentation, and I want to make a comment and ask a question. My name is Daniel, and I guess I'm kind of one of your examples. I guess Ben's example, I'm a younger professional. I work in natural science, and luckily I can work kind of where I want to some extent. So I now am fortunate enough to live in Silver about half my time, and I also live in Tucson. And I want to touch base about something I haven't heard brought up here tonight that I think is a real asset, and certainly it's one of the things that had me spending time here in Silver and in and around the Gila for, I don't know, 10 years or so before I was actually able to live a good chunk of time here, and that's the climate. It's cooler, and it's getting hotter. You know, the people in the Southwest live in hot places, and I can tell you, I think there's a big market in places like Tucson where it's 200 miles. You can drive there in 3 hours or less, a big chunk of the year. I mean, it's pretty hot in Tucson about 6 months out of the year. And so I wonder how much people think about promoting the climate in the Gila in the summer. You know, it's hot in El Paso. It's hot, certainly hotter in Arizona. Phoenix is a little different because people in Phoenix have traditionally gone to Flagstaff. You know, that sucks up a lot of the mountain travel. And it also seems, and it would be good to get some perspective from some of the panel, that people are traveling closer to where they live. You know, the idea of taking these cross-country trips, people are going places a little bit closer. And I wonder if that would help repeat visitation. One of the things I noticed from Catherine's slide was that repeat visitation to New Mexico was low. And if you're bringing people out of Arizona or other hot places, especially about half the time of the year, would you have more repeat visitation? And then finally, I actually have heard some promotion of the Gila and Silver City in Tucson in the summer. There's some targeted stuff, like come up to Silver City for an art festival. I usually don't hear anything about, it's a lot cooler up here when people are sweating it out, you know, where it's 110 degrees every day. In addition to that, do you think there's potential to try to use social media for people to create this buzz about visit the Gila, visit Silver City, in addition to more traditional paid marketing and advertisement? So I guess that's my combination of a comment and a question from my direct experience of why I think it's good to be here. Thanks.
You know, I wouldn't want to be on record as forecasting demographics as a response to climate change, but if you tap into some of the organizations working on adaptation related to climate change, there is a whole thread of discussion going on around climate change refugees and where they're going to go. People are definitely going to get displaced. It's a question of on what timeline and where they're going to want to go. We worked with Missoula County in western Montana not long ago on an economic development plan, master plan. And people raised a series of climate issues because the big river running through town is a Superfund site next to it. And if it floods, they have a huge public health issue. And the flooding has become more severe. And you know, they're asking why. And so we did this charrette exercise. And person after person stood up and said, well, I think the main impact of climate change on Missoula County here in western Montana is that people are going to be coming here. What are we going to do with all of them? And it literally never dawned on me before, but I started seeing people talking about that. I don't know if it's going to happen or not, but I do think people will make some moves based on the shifting climate and its impacts, particularly the severity of fire and flooding. But we'll see. I come down here, I think it's awfully hot, but, you know, relatively speaking.
Well, just to touch on weather and temperature, I sort of do that already in my advertising. I advertise that we ride here year-round. that's been a little bit easier to do now since the weather's changed a little bit. I don't know how exciting it's going to be. I just booked a trip for January 1st through the 5th. So I'm going to be out in the wilderness during New Year's, which is great, but you know the weather can still be cold. But that's how I've sort of encouraged the year-round type of visitation here, is just because of the weather's mild up during the winter. And during the summertime, people still have the idea that this is just a basic desert. And so in the advertising, through using that writing year-round and promoting the high country, you know, the time of the year has changed quite a bit for me. My busy time used to be spring and fall, because those were basically the intermediate times of these extremes. But now with the weather changes, I get people middle of summer, I get people middle of winter, and that's, you know, that's helped quite a bit. You know, that's how I've dealt with it.
Good observation, Ben. I find that you're right, that people do perceive that southern New Mexico is hot in the summer, even though it is cooler, way cooler than Tucson and Phoenix. So that is something that we need to dispel, I believe. And how to do that? Yes. And social media, absolutely. That is basically free, although it does take effort. But social media is a way to get some buzz going, as you said. So I'd love for you to take it on. Younger people like yourself are, you know, you're a little more savvy in that direction. One other thing that I would like to mention is the weatherman. You mentioned the weather. If you have a press release that's going out, it's not a bad thing to send it to the weatherman in various markets, because the weatherman, actually, they can read your press release, and you know they aren't the news people. They can, you know, they do like to have happy news, and if the weather is the same, like in Tucson, the same, it's hot, you know, cool off in Silver City. So that would be a very good idea, is in the summertime, send your press releases to the weatherman and the TV station in Tucson and Phoenix, and, you know, you might find that you get some response.
Thank you. My name is Sarah Boyette. I moved to Silver City about a year and a half ago. From near Missoula, Montana, I lived up the Blackfoot, and my concern is that, like so many of us here, I've been in the environmental war trenches for many, many years, and so many times when ill-conceived projects are brought forward under the push of jobs, 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 those of us will come and say at public hearings, legislative hearings, but look at these tourism jobs. You know, these are real. I actually heard a legislator in the Montana legislature go, and this was a battle over turning the route from Lewiston, Idaho, up into Canada into a route for megaloads for tar sands equipment. You know, this beautiful along the Lhoxa and Clearwater and up the Blackfoot. And in trying to get some legislation passed to get that project canceled, one legislator said, well, these tourism jobs you're talking about, you know, fishing guides and people that have B&Bs and birding, those aren't real jobs. I mean, those people just do that because they like to, and, you know, they're just having fun. Those aren't real jobs. I guess my question is, my comment is, and I've worked in the hospitality industry, and I've never worked so hard as at a B&B and a fishing lodge. I guess I would like to see the image of tourism jobs become a little more balanced, that people really do understand that just because you're having fun doesn't mean that that's not a real job, as opposed to driving a big truck or mining or whatever. That in so often when those environmental battles take place, it really is this conception of real jobs versus tourism jobs. And I don't know if anyone else sees that as kind of a way to continue to fight these battles and say we need to protect the beautiful places in the world, and the way to do it is through jobs in the tourism industry. So I don't know if that's a legitimate concern, but it is one that I have. Thank you.
Well, geez, I'm sure you missed my presentation. I went the whole time without talking about tourism and recreation, very consciously, because I think we do draw in our mind a dichotomy between real and not real, and high-paying, secure, whether that's true or not, and seasonal, low-paying, and unreliable. You know, between the old resource jobs, which we knew or know, and the newer jobs, which we're not sure about. You know, there's a lot of questions, and people will come up with these simple dichotomies. They're not that helpful, by and large. I know you put that out there. It's really a straw man. But if I travel around western Montana or rural Idaho or even rural New Mexico and I stack a $690,000 annual job in the mining industry against a $12,000 part-time job in tourism, I'm not going to get very far. The good news is you don't have to do that. One, there are jobs that have incredible value add and that are, I'm guessing, remarkably lucrative if you practice them at, you know, the guiding outfitting at the upper end of the skill band, and you're clear about who you're marketing to. A lower volume, higher value proposition. That's clearly one way to think about tourism and to talk about it in contrast to jobs that are either not growing or are declining, and how do we replace those. But more generally, I tried to argue in my presentation that the economy is growing largely outside of recreation and tourism, and there's a really fierce fight for who's going to get the higher skill, higher wage parts of that. And for the first time, really, that I can think, rural America is competing successfully for those jobs within the growing services arena in places that have the quality of life and some of the infrastructure places, including airports, can succeed there. That said, there is one thing I want to mention about the linkage between tourism and some of the higher paying services sectors, and that is what some sociologists and geographers will call travel stimulated amenity migration. We actually did, my colleague Ray Rasker with some poli-sci folks at Montana State University, interviewed small business owners in the three counties in southwest Montana north of Yellowstone National Park, Madison Park and Gallatin counties, and asked them how they came to bring their businesses here to southwest Montana. 9 out of 10 said they came first as tourists and fell in love with the place. So Catherine referenced that. That's a significant asset that the rural public lands west has, with its iconic landscapes, its accessible landscapes to the public for whatever purpose. It sets us apart and gives us an edge. And many people don't get to know about these places until they actually visit or have a guide to take them into them. And then they fall in love with them. And they start asking questions, perhaps like this gentleman, about how can I spend more time here? And it evolves.
Stay tuned, and we'll be right back.
I had a German gentleman that used to come every year to do a trip with me. Predominantly, most Germans are really they're in love with the West, and they try to spend as much time as they can here. And this gentleman, after about the fourth visit that he'd been over here after about 4 years, he made a comment. He said, "Well, I'd like to own a ranch one day." And I said, "Well, do it." And at the moment, that organization became an organization there in Tombstone, and they built a resort and hotel and restaurant. And you know, that's just an example of some of these people that come and end up falling in love with the area and wanting to do something here. But as far as I know, they built a small city over there, and they've employed several people, and it's creates jobs.
I have a small business here that opened actually a year ago, and I love it. But one thing I wanted to mention was that this has been probably a very tough year for us as merchants with tourism because of the fires. How can we strengthen the ties with the National Forest Service and everything else who owns all this to keep everyone informed? And also, to nationally, how do we combat all the negative publicity of everybody thinks we're burned up and no longer here? And it's got to be something on the national level. So who is speaking for us? Is the tourism board doing this? We're almost like tourism boards in every store, trying to give them other things to do. I hope that there can be some larger scheme of organization to help all of us in this area to do that, because we're so tied to the forest.
I'm going to jump in here a minute because it's really timely. We had the New Mexico State Tourism Commission here last Friday, and because of our concern for the catwalk, we actually had the ranger down from Glenwood who gave us a schedule. And we are all trying to get on board. And we actually have information specialist from the Forest Service with us this evening. And I'd like to have Andrew go ahead and just give us a little bit of what's going on. Because we worked during the fires, we worked very, very closely. And I actually want to let you know a little bit what happened on that scenario. There were 12 of us, including Denise Smith from the Sustainability Office for the town of Silver City, and we were over at the International Climate Change Conference in Tucson when the fires took off. And not only were we recognized because we were this little contingency from, we had the largest number of attendees, and we were from Silver City, New Mexico. So they recognized us from the podium. And then as the week continued, they brought up our fires. And I was on the phone with Adrian, who manages the visitor center, with the Arts and Cultural District, who manages our website, and we immediately were trying to get information out. We rely heavily on the Forest Service because they are the ones that are really in the know. And so we immediately tried to link with them so that we wouldn't be trying to be the middle person. We could link with them. And I'm going to turn the mic over to them in a moment, but I just wanted to mention also with when we came back from that conference, the town of Silver City is really taking a wonderful lead. We are looking at resiliency. We are looking at, not only do we attract snowbirds, now we know we're going to be attracting sunbirds. And we recognize we're trying to look at how this is going to affect us, you know, the economy, what concerns about wildfires, water. We're trying to look at the risks. The city council has basically asked us to go ahead and come up with some ideas that will then be tied into the comprehensive plan this coming spring. So it's real exciting to live here. There's a lot going on. But I'd like to have the Forest Service go ahead and just let us know all you're doing for public information.
Yeah, I'll actually answer that. My name's Kelly Russell. I'm the Forest Supervisor for the Gila National Forest. And like she mentioned, Andrew is one of our public affairs specialists. But we're also worried and would like that, you know, that more people get the correct information. I often hear things that, you know, people will tell me, they heard this or that, and it's like, really? And it's important to us that people get the correct words, because I know a lot of you depend on it for your businesses, especially this summer has been especially tough. You know, and then last year we also had the Miller Fire, which heavily impacted the cliff dwellings and some of that area. I would say, you know, anything we can do to help those ties and to improve those conduits of information, like to the Chamber of Commerce's in different areas. I would say anytime you have a question about something and you really want to confirm it, call the district ranger for that area and they'll know, you know, hopefully they'll know. If they don't know, then something's wrong. They can call our office, myself, Andrew, Andrea Martinez, who is our public affairs officer. We can tell you what we know immediately. We don't have a lot of secrets, you know, when it comes to public information about what's going on in terms of impacts on openings and closings. And as to the catwalk, we're working to get open as much of it as we can. We had to pull out parts of it, the bridges, because we were concerned there could have been a wall of water coming down through there based on, you know, different models that were run, and we didn't want to see a mangled mess going through the canyon and ending up downstream in someone's home. So we did make the decision to do that, and we're putting stuff back in. We're working on putting the restrooms in right now, and hopefully the plan is by next spring to get a good portion of it in, and then we're also working on our funding to get most all of the rest of the upper bridges and things put in as well. But it's a high priority for us to get that in and get it back up and running again, because we realize how important it is to the economy of not only Glenwood, but Silver City as well. I mean, it's a huge attraction. So that's where we are. But I'd say if you hear different accounts of things, call us directly, and we should be able to tell you what we're doing or what we're trying to do for those areas.
One other out-of-area comment. The coordination information, obviously, really important. And fire is going to be more a part of our landscape, probably, rather than less. So we need to figure out how to respond collectively. But I would say from a marketing standpoint and tourism standpoint specifically, it's important not to focus on the negative. I don't know if you all remember, I do very viscerally, the 1988 fire in Yellowstone National Park. And Senator Alan Simpson from Wyoming says this fire is going to simply destroy the economy of Jackson Hole and all of northern Wyoming. You just follow that 1 year after the fire, Yellowstone National Park had record visitation. Turns out, whether it's a morbid fascination or an interest in fire ecosystems or what, people are fascinated with this idea of the landscape and the landscape dealing with catastrophic events, perhaps watching the landscape rebound and be resilient and understanding how that works. Yellowstone National Park really retooled a lot of its interpretation around the fire and found that people were really interested in it. And they wanted to see the devastation, and then they wanted to see the regrowth. And now, you know, a lot of that interpretation focuses on those stand replacement and how it works. And it just turned out to be this incredibly positive response. And Yellowstone, rather than focusing on the fact that we burned down, come back in a generation, said, "Hey, we're an ecosystem scale laboratory. Come check it out." You know, just focused on the positive. Really key to be doing that.
Oh, I just had a comment because I was up at the catwalk just a couple of weeks ago. We live in Gila, and so decided to go up and take a look. It was open, of course, but we'd gotten up to where the narrows occur, and of course the bridges were taken out. But I was just wondering, I noticed that the manner in which I suppose they had to be taken out was that they were all of that was welded in place, of course. It had to be cut out with torches. I was just wondering if in previous years, given that there was such a concern here at this time, if that was ever considered being done before, of taking everything out like that. Has there been another? Is this unprecedented with taking out the catwalk?
You know, I've only been here almost 2 years now, so I'm not an expert of what's going on in the past, but I don't think that's ever been done before. A lot of those improvements, some of them are fairly new, I think. Some of it's been there a long time, and then some of the, like that upper iron bridge was put in just a few years ago. So this was fairly new. As it was described to me, if you had a football-wide river of water several feet deep, if you can imagine it hits that canyon and gets turned on its side, that could potentially have been what came down the canyon. So, you know, that, of course, set off alarms in my mind. And of course, a lot of it, like you said, we had to cut it out, put the pieces on people's backs, and haul it out. Our plan is to put back in friendlier designs where we can perhaps just take off the handrails in the future, because that would be what catches debris. That was the big thing, that they'd be debris catchers, and the pressure would build up behind it and take things out. So they're working on new designs that'll make that better. And you're right, I wish we could say that we're not going to have any fires like that in the future, you know, but can't guarantee that. It's looking to be another bad year. We should start hoping for snow and lots of rain. That is what we need. We got lucky this year not to have the flooding. That was a good thing, but we really need a good snowpack and more rain.
We also want to thank all of you for being here this evening, and especially our panelists. What a great presentation you all made. I think we can see how this all ties together. It is the second largest economic income area for our area, and once the mines have left, it will be number one. So we do need to work together. The Green Chamber is there to help network. We do have our partners, the National Forest, all of our lodging industry, and just keep being Silver City, being yourself, enjoying this wonderful land in which we live, and spread the word. And thank you so much again for joining us this evening.
Well, now that you've heard what folks have to say, let's keep brainstorming so we can grow the economy in the Gila. And thank you for tuning in to Earth Matters, a show about earthly matters that impact us all.